Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let's talk some baseball, shall we? Because the two sides, owners and players, appear to be continuing to talk. And we've heard some optimists say, yeah, it's acrimonious, it's no fun, they're not really moving much closer, but they are talking, and they know at some point we're getting to some kind of deadline, because with every day that ticks off the calendar, that's another day they're not going to be able to play. Here to talk about that and more from FanGraphs is Jay Jaffe. He is on Twitter at @Jay_Jaffe. He's on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Jay, how are things where you are?
Oh, you know, we have our good days, we have our bad days. The nights have been rough the last few in our area. With the protests and all that, we're not far from the Barclays Center, which is a major gathering point for protesters. And unfortunately, some of the ugliness has spilled over there.
Yeah. Before we get to the baseball stuff, I'm just curious on are you sort of wrestling with the same thoughts that we all are right now as we watch the various teams and leagues and players craft their statements? I have to tell you that Jack Flaherty and Lucas Giolito absolutely setting a remarkable tone. And it's amazing that those two pitched on the same high school pitching staff and to see them leading to independently yet together, I found remarkable.
Yeah, I saw Jack Flaherty's statements. I hadn't seen Lucas Giolito's, but I'm glad to hear that there are more players speaking up. You know, it's tough. We don't see a lot of players, active baseball players, speaking up on stuff like this. Certainly not enough relative to other leagues. And I think part of that is because, you know, let's face it, the demographics are different. Major League Baseball is a much wider league, much different makeup than the NBA or the NFL. But it's good to see active players speaking up. It's good to see retired players speaking up as well. And we hope that the examples spread.
So do you think, despite the fact that now we're getting leaks of the counter proposal from the Players Association over 110 games, and the term that I use, owners are saying that's a non-starter, but it's, as we talked with Ian Happ last week and some others, saying the fact that they're talking and we have some deadlines that might be approaching, that there's still a sense of optimism that everybody's going to realize that, and maybe the owners will realize that they're going to have to cleave to this 50% pay cut they initially promised.
You know, I mean, I think the history of labor negotiations between baseball, the players union and the owners is one that's just generally been acrimonious. Most often, though, the two sides do find enough common ground to hammer out a deal. I was pretty pessimistic a week ago when the owners offered that 50-50 deal, particularly how much time had run off the clock since the players had since they had voted on what was I'm confusing two deals. I was pretty disappointed when the owners offered their prorated salary deal, or their reductions on the prorated salary deal, given that it had been 2 weeks since they had voted to offer the 50-50 revenue sharing deal, which was obviously a non-starter from the get-go. the players' response obviously is not going to be directly taken up by the owners, but I do think that it contains, enough bridges to finding some common ground between the two sides. That I'm more hopeful that a deal will get done today than I was a week ago, because I do think the deferrals is going to be a key, that the players giving back maybe more games, more doubleheaders could be key if they can hold the line on some amount of money. But I think in general, both of these sides, they know what they're willing to give up. They know what they're willing to commit, and there's just too much money involved for there not to be a season.
It looks like the expanded playoffs may be a point of agreement also.
Yes, and that, I think, is to me, that might be a tell they know that the playoffs are a huge, are a huge moneymaker. In the context of what's left, if you take away the large amount of money lost at the gate, which is said to be about 40% of total revenue, if they can find room to do that, then I think the rest of this stuff, there'll be some give and take. But I'm hopeful, more hopeful today than I was before, like I said.
We're talking with Jay Jaffe on Sports Radio 670 The Score. I want the DH, and for universally across baseball, I want it now and I want it forever. And I think this would be a nice way of allowing for this this immediacy or this desperation, perhaps, to enact something that has long been, I think, better for the game.
Yeah, look, I think, it will be a preview of what the game could look like after the next collective bargaining agreement. I think we're going to see, between that and the expanded playoff, we're going to see some experiments put into play that probably would not have the chance to be enacted so quickly, under the circumstances of a normal season. And I grew up a National League fan. I was once dead set against watching pitchers hit. Look, I still love watching Bartolo Colon's home run. It is a special anniversary in this household. But I do think by and large that the time for pitchers hitting, it just gets worse and worse, and we see more and more injuries. I just think that universal DH would be a better brand of baseball for all. I'm less sold on the expanded playoff format, but, all bets are off this year. Let's just get a season, and if some of this stuff doesn't look good, we'll move on and make come up with better ideas for how to improve the game.
I'm fascinated by how the game itself could change. And I'm not just talking about around the fringes and with the medical necessity of distancing, et cetera. Literal strategic differences. And we talked a little bit last week with former Cub Ryan Dempster, current broadcaster Ryan Dempster, and he mentioned about, from a starting pitcher's perspective, about maybe if you know you're going to go fewer innings, there's going to be a lot more bullpenning. You pitch as a starter more like a reliever. And in a shortened season, how, in a game that can't be played harder, how does the intensifying nature of the meaning of these games change the way the game might be played or managed? Like, what don't we know about what teams could do strategically now in a very limited and intensified schedule?
That's a good question. And I, to be honest, I have not thought a whole lot about it, but I think you're right. If there's only 3 weeks of spring training to get everybody up to speed, we're going to see shorter outings from starting pitchers. We're going to see more bullpenning. The flip side of it is that we are probably going to see, especially for young pitchers who would have been on innings caps, I think there's not going to be as much concern about that. If you were, slated to throw only 140 innings because you threw 100 last year, well, that's probably not a big concern that you're going to, run out of innings and they're going to need to come up with, another starter to fill your spot down the stretch. I think that it remains to be seen, though, and I imagine that until the big picture stuff gets sorted out, both on the financial side and the health and player safety side, you know, there's not going to be a ton of discussion about what the strategic ramifications of this are, although they will be there.
We also saw the players appear to be willing to be mic'd up and sharing some more of that, which I think is really cool. I think sports needs more of it, and I think it should be more real discussion. Obviously, they're not going to allow it to be any proprietary strategic stuff, but there's a way of humanizing some of these players in the absence of fans, particularly of adding some texture to the game where it's not like, you know, these ridiculous NFL mic'd up where all it's a guy clapping, going, come on, good job, let's go. That it's going to be fun to hear, you know, all Star game style, perhaps conversations or some stuff after the fact. Is that also going to be something that once it's there, we're just going to get used to it, and that's going to be a bigger part of the game?
That's a good question. I mean, I think we've seen in limited glimpses, we've seen some players really take to it. Pete Alonso stands out. He did it last year, and it was a huge hit. I don't know that there, you know, how much, you know, what percentage of players is going to really take to it. I imagine there will be some that want to do it all the time, and some that wouldn't be caught dead doing it. But I think that it'll become something that's accepted and tolerated. Whether it's enjoyed and beloved, I don't know. We'll just have to see if every team's got a Pete Alonso that can do it. It's going to catch on. If most of them treat it like it's a trip to the dentist, the way those in-game interviews on some games are, especially the ESPN Sunday Night Baseball games, then maybe it'll be tolerated, but not much more than that.
Talking with Jay Jaffe on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And we'd be remiss anytime we talk with you, being the Hall of Fame expert that you are, the creator of the JAWS standard. And I'm not going to bring up the name Harold Baines, because I think we've all tacitly agreed that however we do this, we're not going to bring that up, because it's changed the context of conversation. But last week, there was a name that came up because one of the executive producers of The Last Dance mentioned that he has all kinds of footage going back, and again, 20 years, footage of his childhood hero. When he was growing up in Philadelphia, he was a huge fan of Dick Allen. At the time, he was known as Richie Allen, who, of course, Dick Allen came to the White Sox, won the MVP in 1972. And I went back and was going through some of these statistics. And I've got to tell you, for a guy with off the top of my head, his weighted runs created plus is 155, which is ahead of Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and so many other big boy table Hall of Famers. Where is the Dick Allen Hall of Fame case in the world of a Jay Jaffe?
I think that he is on the top tier of players outside the Hall of Fame, eligible for consideration by the committees who should be in. I would put I think the only player that I would definitively put ahead of him is Minnie Minoso for his pioneering role as the first Afro-Latino player in the majors, and the way he was viewed and the way he was deprived of several years of his career due to the color line. But Dick Allen, man, every year he played, he was among the best hitters in the league up until about up until the end of his stint with the White Sox and the injuries that followed in its wake. MVP, perennial All-Star, not much of a hitter, but he bounced around the diamond and would easily out-hit his mistakes on defense. He's by my system, he's classified as a third baseman. He was not a good third baseman. Again, out-hit his mistakes. He still scores, even with a short career, still scores about on par with the average Hall of Fame third baseman, well ahead in terms of the 7-year peak. His best 7 seasons by my system using wins above replacement. I think when you look at the context of his career, the things that shortened it, the injuries, the way he was mistreated by the media, he was ahead of his time. He was a black athlete who was outspoken at a time when the mainstream media was expected black athletes to be much more deferential. He was a 21st century player stuck in the late 20th century. And You know, he got put in some unfortunate positions, particularly by the Phillies, who sent him to integrate the Arkansas League, at a game where Orville Faubus, who called in the National Guard to prevent the enforcement of a desegregation ruling, threw out the first pitch and got death threats from his first professional game onward. So, just, you know, remarkable stories of the abuse that he endured. But, man, the guy could hit. I think when you look at the context of his career, it seems pretty clear to me that there's a lot of misinformation out there about him, particularly about his effect on teams. His managers spoke up for him after his career and said, no, Dick Allen was not a problem. You know, give me players who could hit like Dick Allen, please. So I think he should be in, and I'm very hopeful that when the Golden Days era committee votes in December, that they will elect him and hopefully Minnie Minoso as well.
Yeah, I was surprised going back and looking at Minnie Minoso's statistics through a modern lens. You talk about ahead of his time. I mean, the way he approached the game and just looking at the on-base numbers, particularly there, that was a very slash line that a modern baseball analyst would understand its value maybe in a way that it wasn't when he played.
Yeah, he didn't have huge power numbers. Minoso didn't have huge power numbers, but a lot of speed. Extra value on the bases and in the field. And, you know, when you use wins above replacement, there's an 11-year stretch where among AL players, only Mickey Mantle was more valuable. And this is when Minoso was maybe hitting 18 homers a year or something like that. So just that on-base percentage, it was tremendously valuable. And it's a shame we didn't get more of his career, you know, and that he missed out on you know, the White Sox World Series and the Indians World Series just by, you know, quirks of the timing of his career. But just what a fantastic ball player.
Jay Jaffe, always a delight. We appreciate your time and best of health and safety to you and your family.
Hey, thanks so much. And likewise to you and to your listeners as well.
That's Jay Jaffe, senior editor of FanGraphs. I'm Dan Bernstein, and we're trying to do a lot today. And I know it's not easy, and I know it's not going to make everybody happy, sort of the way we're trying to do it. But all I can tell you is we're doing our best to do to talk about sports and to talk about everything else that is going on, and all the unfortunate discomfort that so many people are feeling, the anger that so many people are feeling. And this is I'm trying to listen and I'm trying to learn. And there are some very angry, scared, sad, powerful voices out there right now. And we're taking notice. It's too bad that sometimes things need to be lit on fire for us to stop and listen and try to understand and hear, because we're very quick to say, no, that's not the right way. Don't do it that way. Now you're too loud. Oh, no. Don't take a knee in peaceful, silent protest, because that's bad for the country and you're a bad person. You're a son of a bitch that needs to be fired because you're daring to point out that there are bad cops killing unarmed black people. You know, think about that for a second. Think about what we went through with all that. Think about it. And what it comes to, because we couldn't deal with that. We couldn't just listen. We couldn't hear what he had to say and say, you know, what are you really saying here? And what can we do about it and make it constructive? Instead, it was reductive. Instead, it was, he hates America. He hates the troops. He didn't say anything about it. Troops? Nothing to do with America. The most American thing you can possibly do is protest injustice peacefully. There's nothing more American than that. And confusing the patriotism and nationalism and allowing all this frenzy to get whipped up over and being almost, and those of us pointing out at the time that people were being knowing pawns in it and willfully ignorant. And even that gets reduced and shouted down. Have we just listened any number of times? You know, we keep using that the phrase as we're talking about pandemic life and unprecedented times. You know what's sad? This isn't unprecedented in any way. It's ongoing. It really hasn't changed. What can change is how we understand it and how we perceive it. This is the furthest thing. When it comes to the riots over injustice, riots over bad cops murdering black people. It's not unprecedented. It's way too precedented. And my parents were young in 1968. They had just gotten married in 67, had me in 69. And they told all kinds of stories about 68. I've watched all documentaries about 1968. And, man, this is all, it sure sounds like how they described it. It sure sounds like how they felt about what was happening then, the year before I was born. And these are, unfortunately, these are very, very much not, in this regard, unprecedented times. And it's really too bad. I want to hear when we come back from former NBAer Steven Jackson talking at a protest in Minneapolis. We could also hear from DePaul head coach Dave Lato, who was on with Mully and Haw this morning, talking about the Zoom meeting that he has with his team, what he's saying to his team. It's all good stuff, and I think we just need to hear from as many voices as we can. We're going to hear from the voice of the Bulls coming up at 11:40. Chuck Swirsky is going to join us, and obviously some of his perspective on this, informed by all the time that he spent in Toronto. I don't know if you saw Toronto's president, the Raptors president, Masai Ujiri, was writing some really good stuff, too. We can talk to him about that and more. I'm Dan Bernstein, and you are listening to The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Dan Bernstein with you on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 312-644-6767. That is the number to call or text. And on Friday, former NBA player Steven Jackson spoke at a rally for his friend George Floyd. And he had what I thought were some powerful words.
I'm here because they're not going to demean the character of Greg or George Floyd.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
My twin. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when police do things that they know that's wrong, the first thing they try to do is cover it up, mm-hmm. and bring up your background, mm-hmm. to make it seem like the that they did was worthy.
That's right.
Right. When was murder ever worthy?
Never.
But if it's a black man, it's approved. You can't tell me when that man had his knee on my brother's neck, taking his life away with his hand in his pocket, that smirk on his face didn't say, I'm protected.
That's right.
That's what it says. That's what it says.
You can't tell me that he didn't feel that it was his duty to murder my brother and that he was fine with it, that he knew he was going to get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell me that wasn't a look in his face. We've seen this so many times, and we see it right in our face and we don't get no justice.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to common sense?
That's right.
What happened to just opening your eyes? Your eyes don't work now? Videos, what is videos for? Videos don't work now, they don't mean nothing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Only when you black.
Mm-hmm. Say that.
My brother was someone who died trying to be a protector and a provider for everybody.
Mm.
But one thing a lot of y'all don't know, that's damn near every black man.
That's right. Talk about it.
That's good, sir.
Because where we come from, yeah. We have to learn how to protect and provide.
Mm-hmm.
How not? The ones that don't know how to protect and provide, the ones that ain't proud to be black, are the ones that get knocked off early. You have to be strong where we come from in order to survive, in order to be successful. It's 10 times harder. And I tell people all the time, the difference between me and my brother Floyd is I had opportunity. So many of my brothers are so talented and sitting in the ghettos and the hoods right now because they don't have opportunity.
That's right.
Big facts.
And y'all wonder why we angry. We're not just dying. It hasn't been fair to us.
Well, I don't wonder. And I understand a lot of this anger. I understand. Watch the video. Watch the video. Watch the video. Watch the video. And then realize that could be your kid. And think about how you would feel seeing it another one. This is just the latest one. This is what Colin Kaepernick wanted us to think about. It's not okay. It has to stop being okay. We have to stop making it difficult to fire bad cops and prosecute bad cops. We have to. That's got to change. And one thing that can be done is to retroactively vet so many people with badges and guns and find out what Facebook groups, what memes are being shared, and root out any incidents of white supremacy as best you can, because there's too much of it. There's too much of a cross-pollination. We saw it with immigration control and enforcement, just the thousands that were also in shadow Facebook groups and the number of these kind of sentiments that get shared. There's no room for it. I also read something really good about the significance of having law enforcement actually live in the neighborhoods that they police, and how going in from somewhere else doesn't have the same kind of connectivity, the same kind of connection, of understanding. There's a lot of hardworking cops who do live where they patrol, but when you're coming in from outside and it's not really your community, it is in name, where, as we know, and there's a lot of ways to look at Chicago and a lot of different neighborhoods that are indeed and genuinely Chicago, but are very much not like each other, of what it can mean to have more people living where they're actually in charge of protecting people and not being some sort of frightening occupying army. And I did notice that there is going to be some legislation proposed in Congress to end the practice of outfitting local police forces with military equipment. And it's probably coming too late, but it is absolutely, absolutely something that should be done. Jim is in Winthrop Harbor. He's on the Score. Hi, Jim.
Harvard. I'm in Harvard, Illinois.
Okay. Sorry for that.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for the show, number one. Secondly, I'll be brief because I'm a white guy. I need to just listen, and I've been listening all morning and for years to your show. But this whole talk about a bad apple, we're forgetting one part of that aphorism, which is one bad apple spoils the whole barrel. And we saw that with George Floyd. There were five guys watching, you know. So what about him being a bad apple has infected that whole police force? So we saw it visually worked out. And I was so disappointed when Goff was fired by the Score. You know, it's a little bit like the NFL, you know, coming back and saying we support this now. It's great. We got to do it. But let's not forget the decision that was made there. And his friends stood by and watched. Thank you.
Appreciate it. There are all kinds of ways to look at that bad apple analogy, and I agree. I think you're right that the point is that the good apples become bad when they don't say anything. It's just it's one thing if we expect things to be right in front of our face and said in certain ways. So much of it is nuanced. So much of it is implicit and subconscious and misunderstood biases and motivations, where it isn't something you can easily identify. Where somebody is going to say, here, you are over here because of this, and you are in this category because of this, and this is what I'm asking you to do. No one, I wish it were so easy. I wish it were so easy to know for sure and to say, I'm calling this out because this is what I see. And there's a lot of times where we could end up being wrong. And that's where understanding the way I want to know better why I perceive certain things. I want to know why that there are, and whether there is implicit bias training in every level of every organization of why you think certain things of certain people. Why is it that the two people doing who are exhibiting identical behavior or saying the same things at the same volume, where one is going to be perceived completely differently simply because of that person's appearance? That's a fact. And I would love to live in a world when where so many things are so obvious and we can say this is being done for this reason or this motivation, and it's gonna result in any number of different and new unfairnesses and new inequities. And that's just the uncomfortable truth of a lot of this. Like I say, the and I think you mentioned too, the best thing we can do is try to listen and educate ourselves and improve. And I know this isn't anything satisfying or particularly deep or wise, but that's all I got. Somebody talked today about what he was doing in charge of his team. Dave Leto, the head coach of DePaul basketball, was on with Mully and Haw earlier today. And he mentioned that he has a Zoom call with his players. And he was asked specifically about if he's talked to his team about the death of George Floyd and the aftermath.
Yeah, we spent almost 2 hours yesterday on our Zoom call. We have a weekly Zoom call, just to keep updated and stay connected with one another. And, aside from the normal things you would talk about, academics or what's going on in their own individual homes or communities, this took over the conversation purposely because it's so critically important, particularly for young people, to try to come to grips with their hurt, their pain, their anger, and most importantly, what to do about it. So, for me, it was an opportunity to have a teachable moment with them and continue to have one, quite honestly, because, as you mentioned, this is a really critical time that we're facing, and people are wondering what to do and how they look, at a society that has been unjust. Not just with police brutality, but just, a very unbalanced society with people of color. And so it's something that we think is very important to our guys. And we're going to continue, as I mentioned, to talk about it over and over again.
How would you describe their collective state of mind, Coach? Because obviously you are a parent, you are a coach, but you're also an adult. You're an African-American role model who has a voice that carries, but these are young men who have yet to make their own way. So they probably get on that Zoom call. They probably, leave that Zoom call and they go back to their families, and they have these questions and they have these concerns. And how would you characterize their state of mind?
It's generally speaking, they're confused, and confusion comes from anger. They want an explanation as to why, not just why this is happening. I think that's the most critical question that goes through their minds, but why isn't something being done about it? Not just in what we saw, in front of our eyes, the tragedy of George Floyd, but if you can go back historically, and why does this keep happening? Why does it keep happening? And why is there freedom to say, in another month or two or three or six, it'll happen again? I think that's part of their distinct emotional state of mind, where they're angry and confused. And so we live in a society that is unbalanced. And so I can't promise them that it won't happen again. But what we can do is try to understand what to do with those emotions, how to tear a negative into a positive. They're at a critical point. If you see, a lot of the protests and or looting and riots, it's mainly young people. And so it affects them greatly because they have so many opinions about what's going on in this country. So we're going to try to continue to kind of put them in a better place as to how to deal with those emotions.
Coach, do you have any insight into this? And over the course of your lifetime, you've certainly seen a lot of things happen and a lot of sort of static things occur when it comes to race relations in this country. I don't understand I have no knowledge of how this hasn't improved. And I was saying, I listened to a speech that JFK made in 1963, which would be 57 years ago, about riots in Birmingham. And you could apply the things he was saying then to right now and what's happening right now.
Well, we could talk about this for hours, and I think, you know, I have very, very distinct and strong opinions about this and many layers of it, you know, and race is a very, very, you know, critical part of our society. It's, as I mentioned, unbalanced, and it comes in so many different forms. It's been ongoing for, you know, not just, as you mentioned, in the 60s, where civil unrest was at a heightened time in this country, and you know, there were leaders trying to make things right, obviously Dr. King and people like that, but it goes back, you know, hundreds of years. And so my message, even to our players, it's I don't believe it's going anywhere. It could get better, obviously, but our racial divide is something that is at the core of this, not just this country, but you see it in all over the world. And so when I was, you know, I'm 60 years old now, but when I was a young teenager, I saw it in my neighborhood and burning down streets and early 70s and a little bit of late 60s from what I can remember. And, you know, from the standpoint of what we're talking about, police brutality, you know, you go back to 1991 with Rodney King and 92 when the verdict came out, very, very clear memories of rioting and looting over 6 days in Los Angeles. And so you can go historically into points in time and try to understand why race is at the state it is. I think, you know, across the country right now, over the last, you know, 10, 12, 15 years, it's been more distinct. You know, there are a lot of reasons for that. I think there are some people, although a strong minority of people, that were not happy that America elected a president that was black. And now they have a voice, and that voice has gotten louder. But there's so many layers to this. And as I mentioned, racism comes in so many different forms.
Dave Lato, head coach of DePaul, on the score earlier with Mully and Haw, sharing some of his thoughts. And that's what we've been doing. We've been listening to people's thoughts today. I think that's the best thing we can do in what's really been it was a really difficult and emotional weekend for a lot of people for a lot of reasons, and doing the best we can to handle this by continuing to talk about it and to listen. Chuck Swirsky, the voice of the Chicago Bulls, is going to stop by next. We'll talk to him on the score. This segment is brought to you by Grand Appliance and TV. Grand Appliance is committed to serving Chicagoland during these unprecedented times with industry-leading delivery and in-store safety measures, Memorial Day sale pricing, and an extra 5% back on most appliance purchases. Shop grandappliance.com for offer details. Grand Appliance, trusted since 1930. What we had planned to do all week in our 1140 segment was talk to a voice of a Chicago sports team professionally. So we're going to do Jason Benetti tomorrow. We've got Len Casper lined up for Wednesday. Today, it is this man, Chuck Swirsky. He's on Twitter at CTS Bulls. He's on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How are you doing today, Chuck?
Hey, Dan. Good to be with you. Thank you.
Is there any part of you who would want to be living in Canada again?
No. I mean, I love the country, but I love the United States. I was born here. My father was a decorated United States naval officer. I was born in a Navy family. I'm very proud of it. And I enjoyed my time in Canada, but love the U.S.
I have to tell you this: what Masai Ujiri wrote that was posted in the Toronto Globe and Mail. He strikes just the right tone. He really is a smart guy, and you can see why the Raptors have such solid leadership.
Absolutely. In fact, we exchanged some texts yesterday because I read that op-ed in the Globe and Mail, which is a Canadian newspaper. And Masai is a wonderful, wonderful man. Forget about basketball, because Dan, you and I both know we followed his career, and I was first with Masai when he was an assistant to Brian Colangelo, as Mark Eversley was during that period of time in Raptor history. But he's so much more than that, and just a wonderful, magnificent human being. And, you know, I have so much admiration for him.
We played the Steven Jackson sound earlier in the show, Chuck, about this is fascinating for somebody like Steven Jackson, who has had the up and down career. And, you know, I used to refer to him as on my all knucklehead team because he was just kind of a goof and kind of a loose cannon. But it's incredible to me that he came off like a statesman, and the what he has done in this phase of his career, this iteration as a broadcaster. I just think it's cool to see how the NBA, beyond some other leagues, because of their culture, can have people rise to the occasion. Whether it's Royce White, whether it's Karl Anthony Towns, there are so many NBA voices in Steve Kerr, in Stan Van Gundy, and any number of players who don't sound out of place when talking about sociocultural issues.
Absolutely. I mean, I saw I don't even know, Dan, if it was a press conference. I think it was an impromptu gathering with Udonis Haslam yesterday in Miami.
Yes.
I don't know if you heard that. He was awesome. And you know what, Dan, in this day and age, it's so refreshing for a league and an association. It starts at the top with Adam Silver, and it has a ripple effect with every organization, the Bulls included, that Adam Silver has embraced people speaking out about change or about the culture or about where we're at. And he has no problems with players doing such, or broadcasters, or coaches, or anyone connected. And so I think it's been very, very refreshing, honestly.
It does appear that basketball, because of some of that trust in Adam Silver, because of the lack of bad blood that maybe we see with baseball dealing with Rob Manfred, that basketball does appear closer, perhaps, than we think. I saw Ramona Shelburne reporting over the weekend that it may be that we're sort of orbiting our way toward a return plan. Are you hearing similarly? Because I talked to a couple people yesterday who are fairly plugged in who think that we're down to the exchanging details phase of some of these talks.
Well, I'm sure, Dan, there's a lot of give and take going on with ownerships and general managers and the league office. And right now, honestly, I wish I had a really good answer for a really good question you just posed, but I don't. I think things are still fluid. I think probably they have certain things in place, and then they're probably still trying to figure things out. But whatever happens, I think we need sports. But if you're going to bring it back, you have to do it the right way. You just can't say we're back. And that's why I think they're going over every detail. I mean, this is evolving, Dan. This changes almost every day, not only for the NBA, but the other sports, college. I mean, you know, you hear these comments from some school presidents of Division I athletics. Yes, we're coming back. And then other presidents are saying, well, we're not really sure. Then you hear an AD come out and say, well, fans are going to be in the stadium. And then you see another AD coming out of a Power 5 conference saying, well, you know what? Hold that thought. I really don't know. Do you?
No, I don't think anybody does, and it remains the factual that we're really not in charge, and it could be the whims of a virus that can dictate anything that goes on, and whether or not, and now there's even speculation that some of these recent demonstrations and gatherings might be vector points for super spreaders and for a second wave and all that. We don't know. I mean, it's been an absolute whirlwind, and as this is going on, the Bulls themselves are in flux with new leadership at the top and uncertainty as to if they're going to come back, and if they do, who's going to be running the team. And it's just, it has to be a very strange place for you to exist right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm just the broadcaster. I mean, that's all I am. In the big picture, they've got more important things going on right now as far as just, you know, making sure that with Arturis and Mark and other staff members. But, you know, when it's all said and done, Dan, things will always settle out and fall into place. You know, I mean, right now we're in a bad situation on many, many fronts. You know, the X's and O's of basketball certainly take a backseat to what is happening. I mean, if you think about it, Dan, we're going through a period of time in the history, just not of the United States, but also globally. And this is really, really hard on a lot of people. And, you know, my heart, goes out to so many different factions of society and how we have to deal with this and how we kind of have to come to grips with it and how we have to embrace the opportunity now to do something in a positive manner. So when all this is flushed out regarding sports and how we're coming back, we've got larger issues to take care of. And I hope people understand that we all need to be responsible. We all need to be accountable for our actions. And it starts really with us, period.
Yeah, and I think it starts out, Chuck, to just to build off of that, with figuring out how to do it and figuring out what the concrete steps are, and regardless of what we're discussing here. And I think we've sort of spent the last 3 hours discussing some of those things. And in a lot of ways, for some of us, it's needing to shut up and listen to other people's perspectives. And I always come down to we pay a lot of lip service to empathy. Pay a lot of lip service to saying, yeah, walk in somebody else's shoes or see the world through someone else's eyes. And it sounds great to say, it's really difficult, and it takes a real mindfulness and an effort to actually do it. You know, it's so easy to say we should do it.
You're preaching to the choir. I agree 100%. 100%. You know what? It's easy to talk it. It's another to walk it. And we need to start walking it.
Yeah, it's and we're going to have to start trying to figure out the who are the smart people that we're listening to and what the ways of doing this are. And there's a lot of people trying, and it's going to go in fits and starts. We can't keep doing the same things we're doing, because these last couple of days, I don't know about you, but I've been vacillating between, I have to watch this, I must watch this, to then my circuits overload. And then I'm like, look, I got to close the computer. I've got to turn off the television and just stand outside for a while. But then I feel like I'm being irresponsible for not being connected to it. So there's no comfortable place to exist.
No, I think it just, you know, I think we're exhausted, and yet we have to work through that. We have to work through the exhaustion, and we have to act. And, you know, amidst all these issues right now, we still have COVID, Dan, to deal with. I mean, you know, it's been placed on the back burner. It's still a major, major storyline globally. And on top of that, a lot of people have lost their jobs. And people are filing for unemployment at record pace. I mean, we have so many things going on, but we have to make sure that we always reach out, as you mentioned, empathy and love and togetherness. And I know these words sometimes are hollow, but we have to hold these virtues true to our hearts. At least that's what I do. And so, you know, we have to step up. And, you know, Dan, do I have one more minute, or do you have to run?
Yes. Tell me. You got all the time you need.
So, Dan, there's a program with the Bulls, and it's called BAM, and it's a program in the city of Chicago, and I'm sure other cities, major cities, have it, and it's called BAM, and it's called Be a Man. And under the guidance of the Bulls ownership, with Jerry and Michael and whatnot, the Bulls bring in City of Chicago police officers with young African-American men. And I've sat in on a couple of these sessions with Bulls players. And it's remarkable. It's transparent. It is open, raw communication. And it is unbelievable. It's a cleansing. And to listen and to absorb all this information for someone who has not walked in their shoes by any stretch of the imagination, it made me, coming out of that room, made me more aware of who I am, what I am, the frailties I have, and more importantly, what I can do. And so, you know, that's where, and it's a start, it's a baby step, but it's a step in the right direction.
That's the first I've heard of it. I've heard of BAM as far as baseball, with Baseball Advanced Media. I did not know about that Bulls program. And that's something that the Bulls began unilaterally to try to foster that dialogue?
Well, I know the Bulls are involved, whether other clubs are to some degree. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I can't speak for other clubs. But all I know is that the Bulls and Jerry and Michael Reinsdorf have been very proactive about making sure to reach out to the community. And, you know, the Bulls, and this is not, I'm not patronizing anyone. I'm just speaking from the heart. And I'm very proud to be with an organization who truly cares about the city and the communities and the schools and young people of all color. And so this is an opportunity. When I sat in on these sessions, honestly, I walked in that door. I had no idea what to expect, none. But I wanted to learn. I wanted to listen. And I came away, honestly, Dan, I came away a different man. And I know it was only two sessions that I attended, but it was impactful. And when you can impact a human being to the strides of saying, okay, what can I do? What should I do? How do I get involved? How can I listen better? To me, it was worth it.
What a great way to end the show. There's an uplifting note on which to end the show with Chuck Swirsky. Chuck, thank you for joining us, man.
All right, Dan. Be well. Thank you.
You too. Chuck Swirsky, one of our guests today, along with Sam Acho and Jay Jaffe. Thanks to Jay Zawoski and Ray Diaz for producing this show today. Thanks to you for being a part of it, for hanging out. These are the tough ones, and there's no perfect way to do this. And we kind of started the show and are trying to figure out how we're going to do this today. And I guess that's how we did it, is all we can say. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. Keep up doing what we're doing with the curve having flattened a bit. It's working. Keep wearing your masks when you have to. Keep staying socially distant. Keep washing your hands. Keep listening to doctors and only listening to people who listen to doctors. We'll be back tomorrow. Lawrence Holmes is coming up. He's got Anthony Herron joining him at 1. And if you missed Lawrence earlier today on Mully and Haw, it's an absolute must listen. So don't go anywhere. You're not going to want to miss a minute of the show he has upcoming. So keep it right here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.